Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Joining us this morning is John Steenhuisen. He is the leader of the Democratic Alliance, DA. And we wanted to get some thoughts from him. John, a very good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Howard, and good morning to you and to the listeners.
So there was this, as far as the Jewish community is concerned, yesterday, although it was Purim, although it was a festival that celebrates triumph over anti-Semitism, unfortunately what was happening in Parliament at the time was a case of quite overt, in my view, anti-Semitism. And I was telling listeners earlier, I've avoided labeling the ANC. Maybe I've made excuses for them, saying they've been captured by a BDS crew, they don't understand what's going on in Israel. But incident after incident, we see a total obsession, almost a rabid obsession, where the state of Israel, the only Jewish state, is judged very, very harshly by an ANC, by a government who actually has no right to judge anybody. Do you think that the ANC is an anti-Semitic organization? Has it become that?
Well, if one looks on paper, Howard, about, you know, both the government's policy on a two-state solution, one sees a schizophrenia in the ANC that's come to typify the talking from both sides of the mouth approach. And I see the public pronouncements by people like Naledi Pandor and the populism that they rally up around this particular issue is completely at odds with their government stance on paper. So it's very hard to work out, because the ANC changes their story depending on which audience they are talking to on this particular matter. So when the president meets with Jewish business people and people who represent the Jewish community in South Africa, his story is very different to the one that is then whipped up at ANC conferences and in days like yesterday, where we saw the vote and in Parliament on this particular matter. So I think it's, again, the schizophrenia. And again, it's schizophrenia not bounded with any consistency, which makes it even more revolting, because you talk, you know, they go on about sovereignty and the respect, but have a very different approach in different parts of the world. So sovereignty is fine and protecting communities is fine in the Middle East, but it's not okay in the Ukraine. And it's fine in the Western Sahara and the Sahel, but it's not in Burundi or in Zambia, where, you know, these sort of things are being, human rights are being trampled. And so it's this complete inconsistency that I find completely distasteful and dishonest with when it comes to the ANC. You know, if you're going to take the position, put a flag in the sand and stand by the position, but don't try and go to, you know, Jewish events and Jewish interactions and tell them one story and then do something different in Parliament.
And I think as a Jewish community, I think we're culpable there. And I do think we need to own, it's not a comment that you can, that's something that you can comment on, but it's just a thought as you're saying it, that I think that as a Jewish community, we need to stand up to that. And we need to recognize and not pretend when, alongside the ANC, when we have for example, a Jewish function, or the president is meeting with Jewish leaders, they should be held to account and not pretend otherwise. So perhaps we are partly responsible for allowing that allowing that to be acceptable. Again, not a comment that you can make. We have also spoken to one of the DA councillors, Daniel Shea, Ward 72 in Johannesburg. He's doing a phenomenal job on the ground, but is still enduring and dealing with a lot of anti-Semitism within the Johannesburg Council, coming from the EFF, coming from the ANC, which is deeply, deeply problematic that this is allowed in a country like South Africa. So this is really a major concern. In fact, one of our listeners, and I think this is a very valid point, says, as long as South Africans are marching for Palestinians, we aren't marching for our own rights. Do you think that there's an element of look away, let's look over there because it's safer for us as the ANC that you don't look around our own backyard?
Well, absolutely, and I think that's very much exposed when you have conflicts in Africa with, and let's be honest, South Africa's sphere of influence, as much as they think it's massive, is not. And they have very little cachet or influence when it comes to the Middle East. Where South Africa does have heft and influence is in the SADC region and on the continent, because we are a, for the time being, a leading economy. Although if one reads the news from yesterday, I suppose we're going to, that's also going down the drain under the ANC. But we are one of the leading economies on the continent, and given our history, should be a light, a beacon of light on the continent for democracy, for human rights. And when there are issues that happen in our sphere of influence, we turn a blind eye to them. We don't take a hard line on them. We don't inculcate the values enshrined in our constitution, in our approach to foreign policy, which is why South Africa's government turned a blind eye to the terrible excesses of ZANU-PF, dating back to Robert Mugabe's excesses, to the current Mnangagwa regime, which is oppressing the opposition and committing huge human rights violations. And yet we say nothing about that. We say nothing when Edgar Lungu jails opponents, Hakainde Hichilema, who's now the president, who was jailed and beaten and tortured by the regime. We say nothing in Uganda, where Bobby Wine is being harassed and essentially kept under house arrest for extended periods by the Museveni regime there. We say nothing in Burundi when human rights violations are committed there. So all of these are in our sphere of influence, and yet we do nothing about it. But we've got a lot to say about areas outside of that sphere of influence. Another sphere of influence that we have is the BRICS relationship, where we should be raising our voice if we're to be consistent on what the arguments that the ANC are making about the Middle East. Why is there no consistency then in making those arguments when it comes to the Russia-Ukraine crisis in an area where we are in a multilateral environment relationship in BRICS with Russia? Why have we got a softly approach there? So it's just inconsistency, contradictions, and speaking from both sides of the mouth, which is why South Africa has lost so much prestige internationally. We went from being the skunk of the world under apartheid to being the darling of the world under Mandela, and I'm afraid we're sliding way back into becoming the skunk of the world again, because we side with dictators, despots, and violence mongers around the world rather than on the side that should be consistent with our values and principles.
I mean, I was just thinking as you were talking back to a time when Nelson Mandela assisted the British government in trying to identify and get extradition of the Lockerbie bombers. You know, that was a time that South Africa played a meaningful role in international politics. Look where we are today. It's quite pathetic.
And look where we are today, where the House in the United States, the Congress, is passing resolutions condemning South Africa's relationships with Russia and these naval exercises that are taking place, and putting at risk, Howard, huge investment opportunities for South Africans. We are at risk of losing the AGOA treaty because American legislators are saying, why are we giving preferential access to our markets to a country that sides with our opponents at every single opportunity in the United Nations?
And I'm not sure they're wrong. I was just going to say, I'm not.
To be asking.
Absolutely.
Europe is by far our biggest trading partner. I think our trade with Russia accounts for 1.2% of our complete trade. Our trade with the European Union is by far our biggest trading bilateral agreement. And yet we treat our European partners with contempt and disdain. And this is going to have consequences at some stage for South Africa, because at some stage the patience is going to run out. And Europe, like what the American congressmen are now indicating, is going to start asking questions. Why are we, going out of our way to provide preferential trade and all these things, and it's being thrown back in our face by people who side with our opponents?
Very, very frightening. Before I let you go, I just wanted to circle back on the Palapala from the
Saga. I do just want to make one point, I think it's germane to this.
Right.
Well, two points, if I can abuse the platform. One,
abuse.
It's not in Parliament's power to determine whether we downgrade embassies. This is a point we've made in Parliament with the administration. if you look at the Constitution, consular services and appointments of envoys is contained in Chapter 5 of the Constitution, which is exclusive preserve of the president and his executive. So that notion is of no force and effect.
I'm so glad outside, you did tell me that, because I wasn't
aware. It's outside of Parliament's mandate completely. Right. Parliament can express itself on it, but that is not that does not mean that embassies be downgraded. Wow. The second point I want to make is that, and I think this is an important point, that regardless of what your positions are around various countries, you keep your embassies open, because it is important to have those channels. And I'm reminded, even at the height of the Cold War, that the USA had an embassy in Moscow and the USSR had an embassy in Washington. And I remind you of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Mm. And if it hadn't been for that embassy being open in Washington, the back channel with Robert Kennedy and the State Department officials would never have been able to take place. And who knows, the Cuban Missile Crisis could have ended very differently to the way it is. So Churchill famously said, jaw is better than war. And the only way you keep the dialogue and conversation going is by keeping those channels open. Don't downgrade them, expand them, and keep the conversation going, even if you're in disagreement with that particular country from an ideological perspective.
I think that's very, very important. Thank you for making that point. Can you just give us a very, very quick update on the Pala-Pala situation?
Well, you know that SARS came back and said that there's no record now of Mr. Mustafa having declared those dollars when he came into the country. And obviously this means that the money was in the country illegally and was being used for purposes. I think it's put the president in a difficult position, and particularly following on from the fact that the Concord last week sent him packing for his direct access application. The president's got a serious case to answer now, because the tissue of lies and the house of cards that he built around Pala-Pala is collapsing piece by piece. And it's now time for him to come clean and tell us exactly what was going on. I think there's a duty of care, particularly if you're the president, if you're receiving cash in foreign currency, to make some effort to find out whether it's in the country legally or not, because you have an extra duty of care, because you're the president, and because you've held up your hand and said, I will uphold all law of the republic. So I think there should have been a query at the very least, that where are these dollars from, etc. But I think that they knew that those dollars were in the country illegitimately, which is why they handled them in the way that they did, not banking them, 100%. Not converting them to rands, not declaring them to the Reserve Bank, instead shoving them under a couch. That is the behavior of people who know that that money is not in the country legally and needs to be dealt with in an unlawful way, rather than following the lawful channels to deal with foreign currency.
Absolutely right. John Steenhuisen, that's where we leave it. Thank you, as always, for making yourself available and for your support, DA leader. We spoke about the downgrade of the Israeli embassy, as well as an update on the Pala Pala farm saga. It's 8:48.